Introducing Bluehost Cloud, ultra-fast WordPress hosting with 100% uptime. Want a website with unmatched power, speed, and control? Of course you do. And now you can have all three with Bluehost Cloud, the new web hosting plan from Bluehost. With 100% uptime and incredibly speedy load times, your WordPress websites will be dependable and lightning fast on a global scale. Plus, your sites can handle even the biggest traffic spikes without going down or lagging. And with Bluehost Cloud, you get 24/7 WordPress priority support, meaning you're connected to WordPress experts anytime you need them. Not to mention, you automatically get daily backups and world-class security. So, what are you waiting for? Get Bluehost Cloud today by visiting Bluehost.com. That's Bluehost.com.
What about a funny or odd story from working in the industry?
This whole industry is odd.
You're like, yes, yes, above.
Welcome to Game Dev Advice, the Game Developers Podcast, your place for resources and in-depth conversations with other game development professionals. I'm your host, John J.P. Podlasic. I've worked at 10 different game companies, starting back in 1989 with the TurboGrafx-16. Over the decades, I've developed games like Mortal Kombat, Avengers Initiative, Beavis and Butthead, and numerous others. I now work for a startup called Level X. But this podcast isn't about me. It's about you and the game development community. So if you have questions or ideas, give a call, 224-484-7733, or go to the gamedevadvice.com website. So let's kick things off with the new Game Dev Advice.
Hey, everybody. I've got Edwin McCray on today's show. How you doing, Edwin?
Oh, hi. Good. Thanks, John. How are you?
Good, good. So yeah, let's kick things off here. Like, what's your current role as a designer right now?
So I'm a freelance narrative designer, and also I do some education work as well. And I work for a whole range of different companies doing various stages of narrative design, right from the early stuff like world building and helping indies develop their game concept and how it's going to fit into a fictional world, the sort of story they might want and how they might go about telling it, right through to being pulled on at the end of a process and doing a pass on dialogue and quest design and things like that. So yeah, I kind of do a bit of everything on the story front, and narrative design's a weird role because it kind of also involves a bit of UX design and a bit of game design as well, which I've tended to pick up along the way.
Great.
But as a freelancer, I'm currently working. I'm just adding up my little list here, 2, 4, 6, 8 different clients I've got on the go at the moment, which is pretty usual.
Yeah.
That's everything from flavor text from a card game through to developing educational units for game design in high schools. So a real mixture.
Yeah. And you're based in New Zealand, right?
Yeah, that's right. And a little place called Oamaru, which is down on the South Island of New Zealand, just a little bit north of the closest big city is Dunedin.
Wow. And how long have you been there?
Oh, here probably about, not that long actually, probably off and on, about 6 months. But my partner and I move around a lot. We've been house and pet sitting at the same time. So hence being freelance, being able to do everything remotely, it's been brilliant.
Yeah, you know, laptop and internet connection, that's basically all you need. So then you can kind of bounce around and do the house sitting, and then you got your computer going, you can do your design work and upload stuff.
Yeah,
that's great.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, no, it's been really good.
Where are your clients based? Are they kind of like North America, Europe, combination, all over the place?
Yeah, again, a whole mixture. Yeah, I've worked with clients in the US, Europe. There's been, at the moment, there's a client in Poland. There's a client in Denmark. I did work with, the game, Lost Ember. That's it.
Yeah.
That was based in Germany. But I do work a lot with the local Kiwi devs as well. Because I started with Path of Exile. That was my first big gig, and that was here in New Zealand and in Auckland. But since then it's been a real mix.
That's cool. So how did you get started in the game industry?
Well, it was I mean, partly by meeting the Path of Exile guys at game dev meetups in Auckland.
Okay.
I was working in TV at the time. I was a storyliner script writer for New Zealand's kind of most watched soap opera, actually.
Really? So you're writing soap operas in New Zealand?
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, we have a very much loved soap opera. That's been going since
Days of Our Lives, New Zealand style, or that's
interesting. Yeah, exactly. Although, yeah, it's a hospital drama. Huh. So, yeah, it's been going since 1992, I think, 93, thereabouts.
Wow.
Yeah, so I was working for them, but I was kind of coming to the end of my sort of use-by date for soap opera. I was looking for some fresh challenges, and I said to myself, I was like, I'm going to keep working on TV, but when I retire, I'm going to play a lot of games. And I thought, well, why am I waiting?
Exactly.
there's a games industry, which was only just starting in New Zealand at the time.
What time was that?
Let's see, TV from 2006-07 roughly through to 2011, and it was 2011 that I really made the jump over
to
games. And at that point, yeah, there weren't a lot of game developers in New Zealand, as you can imagine. Mm-hmm. It was pretty young. The Auckland game dev community, I think there's about 30 of us would turn up each month.
Uh-huh.
Now it's 300 at least,
really?
And growing. Yeah, and there's game dev meetups and communities right across the country. So it's just really taken off.
That's great. And, you know, less than a decade, you've 10x'd it. So, no, that's cool. So what do you wish you had known when you'd started? Like, you got in this journey about 9 years ago, right?
And I'd actually wish I'd known a lot more about game design, because, I mean, I went in as a writer and a script writer. So I'd been a gamer my whole life, but I hadn't really broken down the mechanics and analyzed it from that side of things.
Right.
And I soon realized as a writer that I needed to work all that stuff out really quickly so that I could actually fit the story properly to the games,
mm-hmm.
and wasn't just kind of, you know, doing a patch job and adding the story in on top, you know, right after everything else had been put in place.
Right.
I mean, I did look around for, I guess, game design stuff to learn at the time, but there was nothing going in New Zealand that would have required heading overseas to study. And fortunately, with Path of Exile and the early games that I worked with, I was able to learn on the job and kind of pick up what I needed as I went.
Mm-hmm. I've heard of Path of Exile. Like, how big was that team?
Oh, when I joined it, it was only about a dozen. Now it's 120 or more, I think. Yeah, because they had about 20 million odd players, and then not long after were bought by the big Chinese publisher Tencent.
Tencent. Yeah, Tencent buys everybody at some point, yeah.
But the guys are all still working there, and I don't know quite how that all works out, but, you know, it's still going strong. But yeah, it was just really starting out at that point. And when I arrived on the team, they had one act built, and we were just heading into developing the second act. So yeah, it's really early days.
Okay. Platforms. Was it PC? Was it console? Was it both?
Yeah, it was PC initially,
mm-hmm.
and then quite some time later, it went to Xbox. And I think last time I heard, rumor had it, there was even a mobile version of Path of Exile now, but
okay,
that maybe I'm imagining that. I'm sure I saw that somewhere.
It makes sense. If it's popular enough, they'll figure out a way to port it and make it work.
Yeah, exactly. And I still got heaps of players. So very much PC, because it was following the footsteps of Diablo 2.
Okay.
And you know, following those good hardcore RPG or ARPG principles, which is an interesting genre to write for, because in fact, I'm really glad I got a gig like that first, because it taught me to kind of get out of the way of the game mechanics,
mm-hmm.
and fit the story in around it where I can.
Right.
And that's actually stood me in really good stead.
Yeah, that makes sense. Like, let the writing serve the game mechanics and not make the writing overbearing and slowing down or impacting the game mechanics, right? Where you're like, all right, enough already with a cutscene. Yeah. I want to get back and play.
Exactly. Yeah, sorry. It's always my problem with Assassin's Creed and Witcher too, actually. I just find those conversations to stop. But that's just me.
Yeah, they are long.
Yeah, with that kind of game, it's also about, not just the kind of, like, I call it actually creating more of a story experience than telling a story, because what you're doing is you're laying out the story and all sorts of things like flavor text on weapons, short snippets of boss dialogue. You're helping with the environmental design to feed story into that, like, you know, what civilization was there before, so how's the place going to look, and what secrets are there to uncover, and why was it built, and who's this crazy disembodied emperor who's talking to me, that kind of thing. You know, it's almost more like creating a haunted train ride for a sideshow rather than writing a movie.
Yeah, and it's the voice, right? So it creates this world, and it creates this lexicon, and you're kind of immersed in it. And you want to make sure all the pieces fit together and it makes sense, so that you don't jar the player where they come up on a pop-up box and say to themselves, "What the hell is that?" Right? You know, it's like you want to make sure it's all consistent and it has that voice.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's where the kind of the user experience design comes in, because you're constantly working to enhance immersion. And yeah, exactly, not have any of those moments where the player is jarred out of that world.
Right. And suspension of disbelief, right? You got to keep them in there.
Exactly, don't break the fourth wall is the general rule.
Right. You've been in the industry about 9 years now. Like, what kind of advice would you give someone looking to get their first job
with narrative design? For a start, I mean, you've got to be a decent writer. That's a no-brainer. But I would say the next part is, when you're creating samples, really look at showing potential devs that, you know, potential employers that you can do interactive, that you understand how interactive works, and that you do know how to make the story serve the mechanics and not the other way around.
Yeah.
And for me, a really interesting field is interactive fiction in that case, because you can tell a story, but you can also show how you are thinking about the player and how the player can experience a story and change what happens and how your story needs to respond to what the player does and all that kind of thing. So yeah, it's like any way you can think of to try and show that you understand that player is interacting with your story and that you can handle that and make it a cool experience for them.
Any examples come to mind of those kind of games? Just jump out at you, you know, like if you're a narrative designer, check this game out. This is pinnacle or a great example.
Yeah, definitely. Like, you can't go far past 80 Days by Inkle. Just the way the mechanics work with how the text is generated and the characters respond to the different places you travel to, the different decisions you make. It's a beautiful thing. So yeah, I think it's still one of the standout pieces of narrative design I've come across.
Cool. What about advice for someone trying, like, say, advance their career? They're already a designer, or particularly, like, say, a narrative designer, and they want to go to that next stage.
Yeah, well, for me, it's like the games industry is always changing as far as there are new possibilities all the time. As the technology gets better, as people's understanding of how games gets better, there are so many kind of different challenges that arise. And for me, the most recent one has been procedural generation.
Yeah.
And how you go about telling a story or rather creating a story experience when the whole environment is changing and shifting around in response to the player.
Yeah.
Like, so that's been really interesting and satisfying, and that it can be done, and it can be done in a really satisfying way, but it kind of takes a whole new mindset to do it. And yeah, I think that's the advice I would give, is if you see technology like that coming along, is don't be afraid of it. Just lean into it and try and understand it.
Embrace it.
And it's amazing. Yeah, what opportunities arise from that.
So in terms of your projects, what's been your favorite one or two projects to work on?
Yeah, that was a tough one to pick from.
It's a good problem to have, right?
Yeah. Yeah, no, there have been so many cool projects. I've been lucky in that regard. I would say, again, this is an interactive fiction one. I think most rewarding and in some ways most challenging one has been Guardian Maya, which I created with Meteor Interactive here in New Zealand, with Maru Nehoneho is the head of Meteor.
Okay.
And her team. And it's basically a text adventure where a Maori warrior woman has a quite large scale adventure through a fantastical New Zealand. Sort of an ancient New Zealand. I can't talk too much about it because we'll start giving away spoilers.
Oh yeah, right. Fair enough.
But what was fantastic for me was delving into Māori tikanga, which is, you know, a tradition and legends and the stories, the ancient Māori stories. Then also, yeah, creating a really responsive narrative, one so that the player, a reader, feels like the story is adjusting and the choices do have consequences, right, and they're meaningful choices and that whole challenge. And part of that actually was learning InkScript too, which is the scripting language, which was also used to create 80 Days.
Okay.
Yeah. Was sort of when we started talking about a project like that, I immediately thought, oh, what was 80 Days made with?
Right.
InkScript. And
what's it called? Is it InkScript?
Oh, Ink. Yeah, I-N-K.
I-N-K script. Okay.
Yeah, it's a scripting language that Inkle have actually just shared out as open source. So you can download it for free, use it, make what you like with it. It's really cool.
Cool. Yeah, I'll have to put that in show notes.
The other project that has been a really satisfying to create is Project Haven with Foresight Games. And they are a two-person band in Portugal creating this amazing cyberpunk squad tactics game.
Cool.
Yeah, and so just helping them build a cyberpunk world and the characters and everything there. And because we're also going for pretty kind of gritty cyberpunk stuff, I was able to really get really creative with swearing. And because it's, you know, it's all mercs hassling each other and reacting with gangsters and all that kind of thing. So yeah, a lot of swearing. It's great.
That's great. This podcast is E, so fucking A, that's good. So I'm curious too. I mean, you're in New Zealand, you have these clients all over the world. Like, how do you link up, find new clients? I mean, it's pretty cool.
Yeah, thanks. It's actually been a kind of pretty old fashioned way of just having a good solid website that people can, I guess, find me on.
Okay.
And part of that is I've also tried to, I guess, you know, keep that active with blog posts about narrative design and kind of keep the discussion about narrative design going so that Google, you know, if you Google narrative design, then hopefully I'll pop up. And that's been actually really useful.
Okay. A little SEO. That's smart. That's good.
Yep. Yep. And aside from that, I mean, with New Zealand, it's just keeping involved in the community. But you with overseas clients. Oh, LinkedIn is another one. I just make sure I keep my LinkedIn profile updated.
And, yeah, that's smart.
And things happening there. And people have contacted me through there as well. So that's probably the main two would be my website and LinkedIn.
Yeah, that's great.
Oh, I wrote a book too, Narrative Design for Indies. So I think that's helped kind of get people aware of me too.
Cool. And it's out right now and it's in all the stores and Amazon and all those kind of things.
Yep, it's all over the place, and my partner and I are just working on getting another one done, which working title Narrative Design for Writers, so that should be coming out in March.
Great. So in terms of the game industry, like, what are you curious about right now?
Yeah, well, for me, I think, interactive fiction is still really interesting to me because, I mean, it's a kind of a best of both worlds for a narrative designer because, I guess, still be a more of a traditional storyteller in some ways, but you've got the cool fun of game mechanics and responsiveness underneath.
Mm-hmm.
So to me, it's a really, it's a good sweet spot. And the whole interactive fiction scene has really exploded over the last about 5 years as well.
Cool.
A lot more, so, you know, game books and all sorts of things coming out. So that's a really interesting space and really helped with mobile. I mean, it's a mobile first medium, that particular one.
Yeah.
Because it's about, you know, people wanting a kind of a reading semi-play experience, which isn't so compatible to console or PC,
right,
I don't think.
Right. I'm trying to think of that old text-based game. I think it was called Drug Wars.
I heard about it. I think I played it. Yeah.
And it was like, just to date myself, I think I was playing it on a Palm Pilot or something like that. But it was text-based and come up to different situations and you'd be asked these different questions and how you respond and interesting content.
Yeah, I played a lot of the Infocom games.
Those are classics.
Hitchhiker's Guide and Leather Goddess as a Phobos and all that sort of thing, which I probably shouldn't have been playing as a kid, but I did. What's cool now, though, is the technology is so much more advanced. You know, you've got scripting languages that then speak to Unity and things like that, that you can create really sophisticated stuff. And what I'm looking into, and I've seen in games like King of Dragon Pass, and I'm playing one at the moment called Nocht, which is about Robin Hood, is like almost creating town builders with just text. Oh, A Dark Room. That was one of my favorite games.
Dark Room. Ever. Yeah. Yeah, I played it.
Yeah. Oh, it's a text-based clicker kind of town builder with some adventuring elements to it. And it's all done in text and ASCII.
Wow.
It's, yeah. But it was just really compelling. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I think there's a lot of cool things happening in that space.
Cool. Hey, hope you're enjoying the show. If you are, please go to patreon.com/gamedevadvice. We'd love to see if you can support the show and help new episodes keep coming out. That's patreon.com/gamedevadvice. Thanks. You mentioned Unity. So like in terms of like your clients and the work you do, are they mostly Unity based or Unreal or leading one towards the other? I would guess Unity, but I'm just guessing here. So
probably more Unreal than Unity. Okay. But I mean, that's pretty anecdotal.
Yeah, right. One data point.
Yeah, couldn't give you any hard facts on that one.
That's fine.
I mean, for instance, we used Unity for Guardian Maya because Ink, like an interface with Unity, mm-hmm. so that made it nice and easy. Yeah, no, I don't know where, yeah.
Yeah.
In the indie space, I don't know what's happening with the turf war between Unreal and Unity.
Yeah, it's a two-horse race now, and those two are fighting it out for sure.
Yeah, although I've heard of other engines, like, is it Godot? Godot?
I'm not sure about that one, no.
People have started talking about.
Huh.
It's quite cool, also working in the indie space, that you encounter all sorts of other engines that people have just created. Like, for instance, one of the crews I work with is Game Fruit, and they've created their own 2D platformer kind of drag and drop with some kind of coding element. This platform that kids can use and amateur game devs can get in and create prototypes on. Huh. So you kind of learn to work with whatever's coming.
Are they run by engineers, I take it?
A mixture of engineers and designers, okay. Yeah.
Engineers love to write their own engines. That's why I was just kind of extrapolating out there. Yeah. Like, why use an engine? We can write our own. It's like,
yeah.
It's not like it was 20 years ago. You got to roll your own all the time. There's a lot of stuff you can use off the shelf and just customize a bit. But
exactly. I don't want to go out and have to build a car every time I want to go to the grocery store. Well,
right. It's a little overkill. So what about like potential threats you see to the industry? Like what concerns you? And conversely, like what about opportunities?
I'll start with the negative side of things that I'm seeing is that I think there's a couple of things going on. Mm-hmm. Toxic gamer culture is potentially giving us a bit of a bad rap in some spheres of society. But I do know that, you know, some of the big outfits like League of Legends and such are actually working really hard to combat that.
Yeah.
Hiring psych teams and all sorts of things. So, but I think that's an ongoing issue we need to keep aware of. Mm-hmm. The other thing that was interesting, I went to a UX talk with Celia Hodong.
Mm-hmm.
So she's ex Fortnite Epic.
Okay.
She was making an interesting point about engagement tactics, like everything from, you know, loot boxes through to various engagements and strategies to keep us playing, spending long hours playing games.
Right.
My big concern is I think there's going to be a bit of a backlash against, as far as, you know, parents particularly being concerned about their kids spending so long playing certain games. Mm-hmm. And she was making the point of, you know, we're rewarding engagement, but not putting in other things like rewarding things like have a break, you know, rewarding a bit of balance and that kind of thing. So yeah, I think I think the games industry is maybe making its own problem, you know, in trying to engage players in that way.
Right.
So yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens in the future with that.
Yeah. And you know, loot boxes are under fire for a while now, and there are, how do I say, the shady things that go under the hood, you know, with figuring out ways to push people buttons and get them with dopamine and maybe compulsion, inabilities to control, and, you know, it's just all kinds of things. So, yeah, I think we shouldn't exploit people and smarter about this as an industry.
Yeah, exactly, if we're going to be sustainable.
So what about like AR, VR, mixed reality, all these other kind of technologies that are out there? What are your thoughts on those?
I think VR is really interesting. But before I talk about VR, I'll just make a quick note about AR is I personally find augmented reality just downright scary.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it's, I don't know, maybe I'm being too old school about it, being a curmudgeonly Gen Xer, but, you know, I like a good clear-cut break between my games and my real world.
Right.
And
silo, firewall those two, you're saying. Right.
Totally. Yeah. If I'm going to go for a walk outside, I'm going to go for a walk outside. I don't want to hold up my phone and see dragons and whatever, zombie attacks or anything like that.
Right.
So that's just my personal thing is I really like that clear cut difference between I'm playing a game, I'm living in the real world. Mm-hmm. And I think VR does that because it's so immersive and so, I guess, an amazing all senses, well, not all senses yet, but you know what I mean.
Right,
it's an amazing experience.
Yeah, you're stepping in that world. You're putting the goggles on and the earbuds, and it's like, all right, this is, I'm clearly going into this other space versus walking around and, you know, using your phone for AR and trying to blur those two.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And actually, I think that's just tying back to what I think the opportunities are for the games industry plus VR, mm-hmm. is that we're also gathering so much awesome data on player behavior that, you know, I think you can now healthily approach VR like you can have an incredibly immersive VR experience, but also have all of the right tools in place to make that sort of sustainable. So someone's in there for half an hour, and then they have to take a break,
right?
Get back to the real world, readjust.
Yeah. It kind of forces you, right? I mean, between wearing all the gear and potential for dizziness and frame rate and all that kind of stuff, you can't do VR for 5 hours unless you're a little bit of a maniac.
No.
Unless you're a maniac.
Not yet.
I don't know.
Once they fix those problems, then there's the same potential.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, for doing a 12-hour mission as there is with
VR loot boxes.
Yeah, exactly. So I think, you know, I think that combination of what we're learning about our own brains as gamers and then with it is just at the right time for the incoming of VR experiences. So we can actually do it, you know, in a really good way.
Yeah, that's cool. What about a funny or odd story from working in the industry?
This whole industry is odd.
It's, you're like, yes, above.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, one general fact is that I think I've lost count of the amount of post-apocalyptic worlds I've now designed. I don't know what it is with game designers wanting to destroy the worlds.
That's the go-to. I mean, post-apocalyptic.
Yeah, exactly. I've destroyed the world so many times. Right. It's crazy. But I still find kind of funny is when I started early on with Path of Exile. This is no, you know, disrespect to the guys. They've made an amazing game.
Sure.
It was just early days, and it's one of those things. It's a narrative designer's job to point this out.
Right.
It's like Act One, blah blah, post-apocalyptic beach. Okay. Right. And you're fighting humans and zombies, and the humans are standing right beside the zombies. But the zombies only seem to want to eat me and not the easier lunch right beside them. And it's kind of like, it's stuff like that that comes up that is a constant source of amusement to me. And,
yeah.
You know, it's things where gameplay, I totally understand why it works on a gameplay side. You know, good mix of mobs in an area.
Yeah.
But
narrative,
it's
why they're not want to eat other. Yeah. Yeah, right.
Yeah. It's those funny times when mechanics do get out of hand and break that fourth wall. I think that's where crazy stuff happens.
Just to riff on that, like difference between say television and gaming, like where do you see those differences or funny stories or anything like that?
Oh, differences between TV and gaming.
Yeah.
Wow. It's been amazing to see how good TV has got lately. And I do find that, I mean, it's not so much funny, but I find it interesting that I do actually draw on the television I watch a lot for inspiration for the narrative design I then do for games. Hmm. Because, especially TV, because it, you know, shows like Game of Thrones, they set out so many different characters and build such a rich world, and they can do it because TV has... Yeah, a good TV show will have 7 or 8 seasons rather than a movie that only has like 2 hours to establish everything.
Right.
Which makes TV actually really similar to games in that regard because, you know, 7 seasons, 7, 8 seasons, 50 hours of gameplay.
Mm-hmm.
There's a real kind of
parallels here.
Commonality there. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, world design, character design, and TV is a really rich source of learning for narrative design.
What about a game that you're playing right now that you're excited about or?
What did I put down for this? I put down, I discovered an old school one, mm-hmm. And I was looking for something because I'm researching for one of my clients, but Lara Croft and the Guardian of Light. Have you played that?
I'm not sure about the Guardian of Light. I mean, I remember playing the original back in the 90s on PC and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah, yeah, same here. But no, this one is a isometric action-adventure.
Really?
With Lara Croft in an Aztec setting, going through Aztec tombs. Huh. Yeah, they're beautifully rendered. And
interesting.
Yeah, and with very light RPG mechanics. But it just takes me right back to the sort of fun games that I was playing even back on my old Atari 600XL. Mm-hmm. It's got that nice sort of platformer, puzzly, action-y feel.
Right. Who published it and when did it come out?
It was 2011. I'm not sure who published it. Yeah, oh, but
2011. Yeah, probably Crystal Dynamics or something like that. Huh.
Yeah, but
look that up.
Yeah, it's been such a gem.
Yeah.
An old dusty gem.
Right.
And another older game, this is the one game I've probably spent the most hours playing and recently finished it, was Mad Max Fury Road.
Hmm.
Something about that game, the combination of, I think, car development and the post-apocalyptic world.
Right.
I love that the RPG development of Max was actually done in this kind of spiritual way where you met this crazy shaman out in the wasteland and he would unlock dark secrets within you and that would correlate to you being able to hit war boys harder.
Really?
I love that. Yeah.
Wow. I've never played that. I'll have to check that out. That sounds interesting.
Something about it. And it's something I still just will pop in and I'll just drive through the wasteland for a bit just because I find it relaxing. So, yeah.
Run over some shit. And,
yeah. Blow some things up, you know.
Right, right. A little cathartic explosions here and there.
Yeah, yeah. So I know two older games, but yeah. And I just,
that's cool.
Still my current favorites.
Mm-hmm. What about anything I should have asked you about but didn't?
That's a tough one. Okay. We've covered a lot, haven't
yeah,
we?
Yeah, no, definitely have.
I think I'll probably just quickly sort of recap on if you're thinking about getting into narrative design, and especially if you're a writer who's used to writing linear material, really, yeah, put that user experience hat on. Learn about user experience,
right?
Actually, and so you get in the mindset of who is this player? What are they going to do? And how am I going to provide a story experience for them, which often means throwing any ideas of plot out the window, like this happens, and then there'll be this awesome climax. It's like, you just can't do that stuff because players are going to do what they're going to do. And just, I guess, putting yourself in their shoes, like you've entered this world that you've helped design, and then what would you want to do in there? And, you know, trying to get into players' heads and work out, you know, what's going to be the best experience for them in a game, as opposed to like, what story am I trying to tell here? I think that's the big difference.
Yeah. Yeah. And just riffing on that too, thinking like, what about usability testing and things like that? Have you been involved with that? Have you seen that? What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah. Like the sort of the playtesting end of things.
Yeah.
That is also kind of part of my role is kind of coming in at the end and playing through and to check that the whole story side of things is working and that there aren't any jarring moments. And then also listening to player feedback on that about moments where, yeah, things haven't felt right for them or they've noticed things that I haven't. Because, I mean, you get so close to a narrative design for a game that you're bound to miss stuff.
Yeah, you get blinders on, you know, yeah.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
But how do you get that feedback? Is it from like an open beta and people are posting, or is it the traditional focus tests, sit behind the one-way mirror and all that kind of stuff?
Usually from open beta. Yeah. Yeah. Like we're going through beta testing for the second Guardian Maya episode now and just hearing back from people about, you know, things that they've encountered that they found confusing or too challenging or, you know, things like that. Mm-hmm. And then, yeah, online games are great to work with because you're getting constant feedback because it's live all the time.
Right.
It's through comments and Reddit forums and all sorts of things. You end up hearing how people are going, what problems they're having, and you get a chance to fix them, when you're making a, you know, a console game, which is just going to ship and there aren't going to be any updates. Yeah, I guess you have to be more thorough with your actual player testing. And I guess that's the more the focus group kind of thing, but I haven't really been involved in much of that. It's been mostly, beta.
Beta, yeah. Back in the console pre-online days, I used to go to some of those focus tests, and they were always kind of entertaining because you'd have the one-way mirror and you're behind there and the moderator would be up there, and there was politics involved and people wanted to hear certain things, and depending on the game and the demographics, they'd have, especially younger, they have the kids all wired on candy, and then like, you know, did you like the game? Yeah, it was great. I loved it. Can I have more candy? You know, it's like, well, is this really accurate? You just got the kids all strung out on candy. But those things are always kind of funny, especially the alpha person that would just kind of take over and try and sway everybody. And you're just kind of sitting there behind that room, eating pizza, drinking beer, laughing, watching these things going, okay.
Yeah, it turns into a social psych zoo.
Yeah, it was kind of like a circus. You're just like watching this going, don't listen to that kid. He doesn't know what he's talking about.
Whereas what's quite cool, well, cool and scary at the same time, scary cool, mm-hmm. is, you know, once again, when you're dealing with, say, MMOs, big online games, mobile games, the players actually give all of their, you know, all of their feedback as they're playing, like just the things that they do.
Oh, okay.
You know, you're learning from that and making a better game for it just through that. So, which is, like I said, it's scary cool because as a gamer, you, depending on the game you're playing, you are being watched all the time.
Right.
And hopefully it's just to make a better game.
Yeah. Right.
Fingers crossed.
Right. Nothing more nefarious than that, but who knows? Yeah. So where can people find you online? You know, website, you mentioned Twitter, your book, things like that.
Yeah, well, there's my website, which is www.edmcrae.com. Mm-hmm. That's E-D-M-C-R-A-E.
Okay.
Facebook is Edwin McRae Author.
Okay.
And then, you know, if people want to hear more from me, I do have a fortnightly newsletter that I put out, which is a mixture of writing stuff and game design thoughts.
Cool.
and observations I've had. So, welcome to sign up to that. Yeah.
Sign up on the website, basically?
Yeah, just sign up on the website. But failing all that, just Google Edwin McRae. It's a relatively rare name, which is cool. So mm-hmm. you should be able to find me.
Yeah, you and me both. Except yours is easier to pronounce.
Exactly. How do you pronounce your last name?
Podlasek. Podlasek.
Podlasek.
Yeah, cool. It's been said about 9,000 different ways growing up. But yeah, it's a little bit of a tongue twister when you look at it without hearing it. But yeah, Podlasek.
Yeah, hence you go by JP.
Yeah, I started going by JPF a while ago. I was like, maybe that's just easier. People can't stumble on those two letters.
Yeah.
Well, cool. This has been great. Edwin, I really appreciate it. And you've had some great information here.
Thanks. And I just had one more thought. It just occurred to me as far as the games industry goes, it's like, feels like there's never been a better time to be in it. Like it's just, especially here in New Zealand, it's grown so much over the last 10 years that there's just so much going on in the game space now that just wasn't there back in even 2011. So I feel very lucky to be in such a vibrant industry.
Yeah. And you know, with technology and all the different platforms and engines that make it easier, it is kind of it's a very robust time to be in the industry compared to what I saw when I got in and stuff. So it is cool. And I would agree with that.
Yeah, absolutely. And especially that the tools around that where if you want to be an indie and you can make something and get it out there and it's just like it's never been like that before, so it's very cool.
Definitely. Well, cool. Well, thank you, and I'll be in touch.
Just before we wrap up, I was wanting to ask, like, so what's you're working on in the games industry at the moment, like where are you at?
I'm at a company called Level X, which is this cool crazy mashup of like video games, medical, and crazy tech. So we make games for doctors on mobile that are in different verticals. So it's like for GI doctors, pulmonologists, cardiologists. And then we build these platforms. We have this cool tech. We're based in Unity, but we do a lot of custom shader work and soft body tissue and all these fluid dynamics and all this crazy shit. And then we build these audiences on our platforms. And then we partner with companies in the life sciences space. Mm-hmm. It's a startup. I love Zynga to go there just under 3 years ago. And there was about a dozen or 14 of us. And now we're almost 100 people. We just moved third time into a bigger location.
Oh, wow.
We've got revenue. We've got VC money doing this weird mashup between video games and doctors.
That's seriously cool.
Yeah, check out the website. It's just levelex.com. And
That's very cool. Yeah, because I learned way more than I ever thought I would about hospitals and medicine from writing for a medical drama.
So right. You're around all that stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. So that it's still that interest has stayed with me. So that's very cool. So it was LevelEx.
Yeah, LevelEx.com. And then if you look under news, we've been in Forbes, CNBC. Seagraph, we took second place in Seagraph. Our CEO was up there showing our tech and like what we do. And CEO is a graphics engineer by trade.
I'm just looking through at the same time at these the descriptions of the apps you're making. That's seriously cool. Yeah, and I heard of there was a game called Remission, which was a kind of 3D action adventure where your
cancer,
character
right?
shot. Yeah, cancer cells.
Yeah.
The Mata Unihone who headed up Guardian, her first big project was Sparks, which was actually a fantasy role-playing game to help teenagers with depression. And it had clinical trials and ended up in the British Medical Journal.
Yeah.
Something like that as well. And yeah. So yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah. Yeah. And I do feel, I've felt for a long time that there has always been that potential with games, and I've kind of been part of some projects that have kind of, making headway, but it's all been fairly low tech. So seeing what you guys are doing here, that's very cool.
Well, cool.
Cool, man. Hey, yeah. Hey, well, it's been a real pleasure. Thanks, John.
Yeah, it's been a pleasure. Yeah, thank you. Thanks for listening to this episode of Game Dev Advice, the Game Developers Podcast. Go to the website at gamedevadvice.com and you can find the show notes along with show notes for all the other episodes. Please also check out the new Patreon page at patreon.com/gamedevadvice. Have a lot of options up there for how you can support the show. Again, that's patreon.com/gamedevadvice. Thanks again for listening and being part of the show. Take care. Bye-bye.